This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sevasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. We are going to discuss today the sharing responsibility for family planning. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. When it comes to family planning, I mean, women seem to be bearing a disproportionate amount of the responsibility. There are very few male methods for family planning that are both practical and effective. So Dr. Helena is here to explain to us what's on the horizon for safer and better family planning methods. Welcome to the show, Dr. Helena. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you, Mira, for having me once again.
You're most welcome. And Kong Si Fa Chai. I mean, it ends tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes. All the eating and drinking.
Coming to an end.
Finally, I can go back to my diet plan.
It's been wonderful. 2 weeks, actually. You look perfectly fine. But, okay, we're going to be talking about family planning today.
Yeah.
What do you mean by family planning? I remember my mother using this word a lot.
Yes,
family planning. What does it actually mean?
Okay, family planning essentially is actually about thinking about how many children that you want and spacing out pregnancies and, limit the number of of unwanted pregnancies. So it involves, using things like contraception and so forth to space out the family as well as to prevent unwanted pregnancy. So in a nutshell, a lot of people feel that family planning is actually equivalent to contraception. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's not true because family planning is actually a scope way beyond contraception itself. Contraception is actually part of family planning.
So it has links with maternal health, for an example?
Absolutely.
How is that?
Okay, so what happens is that we know that one of the three key components of basic intervention to improve maternal health is actually family planning. The reason being so is because by having family planning, you actually avoided high-risk pregnancy. You avoided unwanted pregnancy and the consequences of termination or unsafe abortion. You also actually prevent about 100,000 of maternal death worldwide by having good family planning.
Okay.
So family planning is very important.
You spoke about spacing out
yes.
pregnancies. Why is that important?
Well, the thing is, if you have spacing out your pregnancy is actually important for women's psychological and physical well-being. If you have too frequent a pregnancy or you have very poor spacing, let's say after a delivery and you go into another pregnancy, your body is not recovered well enough to carry another pregnancy. So you have a lot of risk of having anemia, undernutrition for yourself, undernutrition for the unborn baby. And also, if you have far too many pregnancies, sometimes you have a higher risk of intrauterine death, miscarriages, as well as postpartum hemorrhage, which can be detrimental for your life.
And so what is a good spacing, you would say?
Generally, we would say 1 to 2 years is actually the minimal.
Minimum?
Yeah.
1 to 2 years. Okay, all right. So ideally, if it's longer, the better?
Well, of course, about 2 to 3 years is actually the ideal. If you drag it more, a bit longer, sometimes we are also concerned about your increasing age.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I mean, more of us are having our children later on.
Absolutely.
And so when we do get married and then we start having, we just want to have them really quick.
Yes, that's because, right.
Because
we're catching up.
Yeah, age is catching up. So is there anything wrong with that? I mean, how bad is it? I mean, to have children closer?
Well, the thing is, if you have two children too closely, as we say, that you may not be physically or mentally prepared for that. And especially when you have a very young baby who is still breastfeeding, who is still demanding your attention, and by having another pregnancy on board, sometimes can be a very big strain to you psychologically and physically as well as socially and financially. So really, if you talk about a good spacing, is there at least a good 1 year or 2 years, to be honest.
But on this generation, it's fine. But will it impact generations that follow if you do, in fact, have if you look at better maternal health?
Yeah, absolutely. There are plenty of study nowadays to show that whatever you are actually your state of pregnancy actually affects your next generation or even the generation following that.
How is that?
There are a numerous study. For example, a very famous study is called the Dutch Famine Study. Remember that in World War II, when in Netherlands, where there was a Nazi occupation, mm-hmm. whereby there was actually a very cold period of winter, whereby there was no food available in Netherlands. Therefore, this group of women was follow up, and their children were follow up subsequently, and they noticed that the children who were born by this group of women who was deprived of nutrition actually had higher risk of ischemic heart disease, diabetes, metabolic disease, as well as other long term health consequences. Subsequently, we also noticed that if you are deprived as a baby in your mother's womb, you have actually a reduced fertility ability compared to those who were not deprived. So actually, undernutrition as a fetus actually have consequences for yourself and your future generations as well.
If you look at socioeconomically challenged communities, you would find that they have more children. It's just in general, I'm generalizing
yes,
here.
Yeah.
In terms of family planning, I don't think they are spoken to about family planning.
Yes.
Then they have these other pressures coming in. I mean, is there a solution at all to get people better empowered about family planning? And is that widely available here in Malaysia?
Well, actually, I must say that our government has done a lot of work in terms of family planning, because we had a national population and family development board, or what we call LPPKN, and they have been doing a numerous wonderful job in educating the general public, helping those who really need family planning and cannot afford that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of all these things are actually a lot of programs, a lot of drive, a lot of talks are actually carried out in rural areas, whereby access to family planning was also limited. So, in fact, the uptake of all this family planning in Malaysia is not too bad because of our government's commitment in family planning.
What have been some of our challenges in reaching out to people about family planning?
Well, I think, again, it's actually about education. Again, it's about the public awareness. Okay, there's still a lot of misconception about family planning, a lot of misconception about avoiding unwanted pregnancy, as well as the so-called side effect and the long-term health risk by taking contraception. I think these are a few of our challenges. Also, the taboo of taking pills and so forth in adolescent, for example. So these are the few challenges that we faced.
What are some of the misconceptions? I'm very curious.
Yeah, okay. So, for example, there are social taboo. If you are an adolescent or you are in your early adulthood, by taking a contraception or, doing some, to prevent unwanted pregnancy, does carry a stigma? People think that, you must be sleeping around, you must be, a very loose woman. So usually this is some of the stigma that people have in terms of unwanted pregnancy. Now, also there are a lot of myths and also misconception about, taking contraception not just among the Chinese, also across all races, that if you take oral contraceptive pills, that will reduce your fertility in future.
Right.
Okay, so that's one of that. A lot of worries about cancers, for example, is again, one of the misconceptions and one of the stumbling block that we have in terms of prescribing contraception, for example.
But every time I read research that's coming out, it's always contradicting each other, Dr. Elena.
Yeah.
One study will say contraceptive pills do not contribute towards cancer. Then the next research paper will come out and say, yes, it does. So what is the verdict?
Well, the thing is, in medical science, that's the one thing that we have to accept, that there is always the evidence changes all the time. Yeah, again, it depends on the power of study and how do you present the statistics and the results. Now, there's a recent studies from the Danish studies have shown that if you take contraception more than 10 years, there is a very slight increase of getting breast cancer. Now, but when you dissect the results, mm-hmm. you'll find that it will take almost 100,000 of young women taking contraception nonstop for 10 years in order to have one extra case of breast cancer. So in actual fact, the real risk is actually very, very small compared to those women who doesn't take contraception at all. But then because you've presented it as a relative risk, then it become a very scary, statistics. So in actual facts, we all the medical statistics and more medical research, one have to actually ask ourselves, what is the actual risk to a woman by taking for breast cancer by taking contraception for more than 10 years, for example?
So when you do speak to a woman about contraception, what are the risks that you share with her?
Well, the thing is, there are many things that, for example, I think what we're talking about contraception now is actually about oral contraception.
Yes, oral contraception, yes,
yeah,
please.
There's more,
we'll
there are many
the rest,
other
yes.
than the rest. So about oral contraceptive pills, that there are actually many good things associated with that. There are also things that you have to be aware of that. For example, if you take oral contraceptive pills for more than 10 years, okay, it doesn't reduce your fertility. It is a reversible pill, meaning that once you stop the oral contraceptive pill, you regain your fertility. Now, if you take contraceptive pill and you have a reduced risk of benign cyst in your ovary, you have less menstrual pain, your skin become nicer. If you take contraceptive pill for more than 10 years, it reduces your risk of having ovarian cancer and endometrial cancer, which is a uterine cancer, by 50%. So these are the good points of taking oral contraceptive pills.
Oh, is that why when you have endometriosis, often you're given the contraceptive
yes,
pill?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
okay, to help with the... to control the endometriosis.
That's right. It suppresses endometriosis. So okay. the oral contraceptive pill is a wonderful pill for this kind of things. However, if you take oral contraceptive pills, you have to be aware that there are some people who are not suitable for that. For example, if you have a family history of deep vein thrombosis, or you are known to have a risk factor for thrombosis, that actually increases your risk. So certain oral contraceptive pills may not be suitable for you. For example, if you have family history of breast cancer.
Just to go back to deep vein thrombosis, it means that you are prone to clotting?
Yes, that's right. You are prone to clotting. So therefore, you may not be suitable for some of the generations of oral contraceptive pills.
Okay.
So your doctor had to actually go through with you what are your risks, whether these pills are suitable for you or not. And these are the few things that we need to talk about. The risk of breast cancer, again, as we talked about, it may increase your risk very fractional, but is this a risk that you think that you can accept and you had to weigh it between the risk of unwanted pregnancy and the consequences for it.
Yep.
So these are the few things that you need to really take into consideration.
Okay. We always talk about the woman when it comes to contraception.
Yes.
What about the man? So we'll come back and have that discussion up next. If you have a question, we're discussing sharing the responsibility for family planning with Dr. Helena Lim, consultant, obstetrician and gynecologist. Give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Helena Lim, consultant, obstetrician and gynecologist in the studio with us. Happy to answer your questions on sharing the responsibility for family planning. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So far, we've spoken about the importance of family planning and how that impacts maternal health, your children's health and your family's social and financial well-being and how that comes to play even for generations to come. We've spoken about oral contraceptives, which is what everybody talks about most of the time, forgetting that there are other ways of contraception for women as well. And we'll come back now and find out a little bit more about what are the options for the males to share this responsibility with the women. But before that, we have Amanda on the line. You have a question, Amanda.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
Yes.
So I'm recently married and me and my husband don't want to have children yet, but I don't want to take contraception myself. So I'm wondering what kind of contraceptive methods options that my husband has.
Okay, thank you very much, Amanda. Bye-bye.
Good question, Amanda. Unfortunately, for male contraception, there are the only two available way at this moment. At this time, we have the condom, which is actually by wearing a condom, which provides a barrier for the sperm to go into the vagina and the cervix and so forth. And another permanent way would be the vasectomy. Now, spermicides by...
Just to come back to it, a vasectomy is not castration.
It's not castration.
Everybody seems to think a vasectomy is castration. Could you just quickly explain to us? This is Dr. George's area.
Yes, that's right. I'm encroaching into his area. You will phone me and scold me. Huh?
Come on, George, call us. I know you're listening. Vasectomy.
Okay. Vasectomy basically it means a snip to the tubing that connects the testicles to the penis. This small tube is actually transport sperm into a penis and translate into ejaculation when we ejaculate. So by snipping this small tube, you're actually blocking the sperm from going into your ejaculations. So it is a permanent way of contraception, meaning that after the surgery, there will not be presence of sperm in the ejaculations.
So that's a vasectomy. And the other option?
It's condom, for example. And then spermicides, which is actually using some chemicals and to wash away and kill the sperms after a sexual intercourse. Well, that's not very reliable, I would say.
Okay. But why is it more work has been done for the woman rather than the man?
Good question.
I mean, are men, I mean, based on your interaction with couples, I mean, yes, are men open to even talking about this?
Well, I think more and more men are now more open to this compared to those years. I remember giving, and I would say that thanks to, you know, the constant effort in the obstetrical, you know, world. Now, I used to have a professor by the name of Professor Adib. She's my professor.
My mentor.
If she's listening in, Prof, thank you very much for nailing this into my brain. Mm-hmm. Now, she used to insist that we speak to the couple about contraception after the delivery. So she would insist that we not only see the patient itself, and she would make us phone out the husband and to make an appointment to see him together with his wife to talk about contraception.
And how did you start this conversation?
Well, of course, when we speak to them, we say we will usually explore how many children did they want. Some of them may have 5 or 6 children and they do not want any children anymore. So we'll start about, you know, what are the various type of contraception available, what is suitable for your needs and so forth. So a lot of times the decision is the couple's decision rather than a individual decision, which I find that that's very, very lovely and very efficient way of sorting things out and helping the couple to move forward in terms of their choices of contraception and planning for the family size.
Right. I mean, I did a show with Dr. Richard Verapan on informed consent just a couple of weeks ago, and he said something interesting about how in the West, the women looked at as individuals, whether or not you're, you know, married or not, or you have a partner. And he says, for an example, after a C-section, and the husband was in the surgery, after the baby was born, and as soon as the husband left, is only when the woman was asked whether she would consider a tubal ligation, if it's something that she wanted to do. So she's empowered to make that decision on her own.
Yes.
Now, what are your thoughts on that? It's very different on this side of the world.
Yeah.
Very different.
It is very different in terms of how we look at things, but not on the constitution, not by law. By law, actually, the woman have the individual power to decide whether she wants to have a surgery, a sterilization or not on her. But to maintain the marriage harmony or the family harmony, we usually get the husband to be involved. So in certain government sections, we do get the husband's consent as well to have the wife to have the sterilization or tubal ligation, for example. Well, that has a lot of implication as well, because the men cannot turn around and say that she wanted it and I didn't agree to that, and therefore I use this as an excuse to divorce her or marry another person. So I think we take all this into our Asian cultural consideration, that we always involve the husband as well. But there are pros and cons, as I said, when it comes to that, because sometimes women feel that, oh, it should be, it's done on my body, and why do we need his consent? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you think of family as a unit, as a husband and wife, I think that's a very lovely approach, because you bring two people together into making this decision.
So do you think that obstetricians and gynecologists should continue to advocate what Prof. Adib, you know,
yes,
got all of you to do, to have this discussion after delivery?
I think that's very important, and I fully support her approach in doing so. I think that's a very lovely approach.
Did you face challenges when you were having these conversations?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Please, I would like to know.
Yeah, of course, they were, you know, when it comes to, you know, husband and wife not being able to agree with each other's decision, sometimes we do face challenges in what to do next, for example. Yeah, so husband say, I want another 10 more. And the wife say, no, I have enough. Thank you very much. So we sometimes it's also quite difficult that we also have to, you know, take into consideration individual needs and individual wishes as well. So sometimes it also takes a bit of time for us to comb through, you know, having 10 children on top of 5 children you have is really not so easy. You had to consider that, you know, your wife have high blood pressure. It may not, you know, be suitable and so forth. So, you know, sometimes we take all this discussion into consideration, and many times we make husband understand that why we broach this subject, yeah, because it's not just about your family size, it's also about your wife's risk factors and so forth.
So do you think this conversation should happen even before you get married then?
Yeah, it is important, but unfortunately that may not be very popular
conversation
between them.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Finances.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure which is the worst one to talk about, actually. Finances or family planning.
It's all tied together,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Get past those conversations and you're all set. You're ready for marriage.
Yeah.
What are the main factors when you're looking for birth control or when you're looking for family planning, ways to plan the family? What should we be taking into consideration?
Yeah, it's there are many factors. For example, how reliable the contraception is, for example. Yeah, so some people opted for so-called natural method of rhythm method, trying to avoid sexual intercourse outside the fertile period. But we know that it's actually sometimes not very reliable, because you can miscalculate, or yeah, you may ovulate later or earlier than expected. Of course, safety. We talk about the risks of so-called, blood clots in your legs and lungs, and breast cancer and so forth. And convenience, for example, if you are taking oral contraceptive pills, you have to remember taking it every day. Whereas if you are having a monthly injection or monthly injection, that's not so difficult to forget, for example. Now, also reversibility is also one of the key factors. For example, if you have a tubal ligation or a vasectomy, it's actually very hard to reverse the procedure and make you fertile again. Now, of course, cost is one of the key factors as well, and you have to take into consideration, you know, how long am I going to be taking this pill, or, you know, if I go to the surgery, what is the cost, and so forth. So these are the key factors, and everyone is different, and everybody's need is very different. Yeah.
So besides oral contraceptions, you spoke about injections. What are they?
Okay, they are actually progesterone injections. That's the one that we use, the new method of trial that we use on the man's contraception, for example.
Okay.
So that that injection basically inhibits you from ovulating properly, and also it thickens the mucus of the cervical mucus, making it the environment very hostile for the sperm to penetrate. So this actually reduces your chance of pregnancy.
And this is also now available for the men?
The one that remember there was a news about men contraception, and
yes,
there was a trial, and that
to inhibit sperm production.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And it actually the research was terminated prematurely. Yeah. They also uses the same injection, but on top of that injection, they actually uses testosterone injections as well to top up the testosterone so that they will not have so many side effects.
Do we know why those tests were, they decided to do away with the trials?
Well, the problem is that the result is fantastic because they show that they in 96% of men, it reduces the number of sperms as well. However, the side effect is very... the men couldn't tolerate the side effect. For example, they have mood swings, reduced libido, and some even went into depression and so forth. They think that it is actually very dangerous for men to continue going on the trial. So they actually stopped the trial.
Okay. Yeah. So other forms besides injections, oral contraceptives, what else are there?
Okay, there are also things like implant, for example. There's actually something what we know as called implanton. You can actually put the implant into underneath your arm and it can last you for 3 years.
What does it actually do?
It actually gives up to hormones and inhibits ovulation as well.
Okay.
So that's what we call implanton. There's actually coils as well, what we call intrauterine contraceptive device, that which you can put into your uterus, and it can last you 3 to 5 years, depending whether it's coated with progesterone or not.
Okay. So yeah. what are all these contraceptives doing for the woman?
Basically, it's actually some of them actually prevent ovulations.
So it's increased levels of progesterone is what it's releasing?
Yes, that's right. And okay. For combined oral contraceptive pills, it actually prevents ovulation by providing external estrogen and progesterone. So that actually inhibits ovulations. But for things like coils and so forth, it actually creates a very hostile environment for sperm to survive, as well as reduces implantation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any others? Besides coils and implants and injections?
There are vagina rings, for example. Again, patches as well. But patches has been withdrawn from Malaysian market because I think there's actually a lot of non-compliance because we Asian tend to take a lot of daily baths. So, the weather is a bit humid here.
Yes.
So sometimes we also have issues with
perspiration.
Perspiration and local irritations as well. So it was withdrawn from the market. So it's no longer available in Malaysia, but I'm not sure about any parts of Asia, but I suspect that it's not very popular.
Do you find that couples are open to the idea of contraceptives?
Well, I think they are, actually. A lot of now with the pressure of finances and so forth, I think a lot of couples are looking into, you know, how am I going to, space up my pregnancy and really to make things work for the family.
How do you... Okay, so you said there are only two effective methods of contraception for the men, right?
Yes,
condom,
right,
or a vasectomy. And I do know George has spoken about this before. I mean, the vasectomy rates in Malaysia is very, very low compared to the West.
Yes, that's right.
Why do you think Malaysian men are not open to a vasectomy? Do you think that they don't understand what it is, or is it just a male ego thing that, you know, I really shouldn't be doing this and it's her responsibility?
Yeah, I think in Asian country, a lot of responsibility for contraception still falls on the shoulder of women. And I think there's a lot of myth and misunderstanding about vasectomy. And a lot of men are really worried about whether vasectomy is going to take away their manhood or not. And they will think that, you know, it will. They all have this misconception that it will take away, it will reduce the libido, it will make them lesser of a man. And I think some are worried that, you know, if this marriage doesn't work out, you know, if I had a vasectomy,
right,
you know what is that? So I think it is actually subconsciously a lot of men doesn't think that vasectomy works for them. Because I think it has a lot to do with our Asian culture and perception.
Okay. We're discussing contraception, whether it's for women or men. Give us a call if you have a question. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist in the studio with us. When we come back, I want to find out, as a woman and as a physician, what is Dr. Helena's argument for getting more men to share this responsibility? Coming up next, give us a call 03-77-109-000 on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. In the studio with me, Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. We are discussing sharing the responsibility for family planning. If you have a question for her, give us a call. The number is 0377109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. That question, Dr. Helena, before I left for the market update, how will you as a woman and a physician, how are you going to get men on board to share this responsibility?
Yeah, I think a lot of times it is also, again, about educating the men and also getting them involved in our counseling, day-to-day work and counseling. So I think as an obstetrician and gynecologist, it's actually one of our responsibility to get men involved in making this decision and or making them involved in this discussion as well.
Have you seen that? Are they open to sharing that responsibility?
Well, the thing is, sadly, we have not many options for men until very recently, or most of the new drugs and we are talking about are still under research. So really, the availability is very limited. So again, like I said, a lot of contraceptive methods as well as the approach and responsibility still fall on the shoulder of women.
Okay. Yeah. So unfortunately, we still got
a long way to go.
Yes, yeah. Okay. There is research on non-hormonal methods to inhibit sperm motility.
I apologize. No problem.
Motility is the speed in which they
the
swim.
Yes,
okay, all right. So how effective and safe do you think is this method?
That's very interesting because they actually use the African hunter's poison. Ah, that's very interesting. And I don't know whether I'm pronouncing this correctly or not. It's called Obain. Now, this was actually used in hundreds and hundreds of years ago to kill your enemy. Okay, what does this Obain do? Is actually it binds to a receptor and actually inhibits your potassium and sodium transportation. And so your heart stops. Okay, so now we know that Obain has a different, there are different types of Obain and different type of receptors. Now, so there's one particular Obain, types of Obain that actually binds to alpha-4 receptors, which is actually solely in your testicles. The receptor is not, available in your heart or any parts of the body, and actually it reduces your sperm motility.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can't swim and move as fast.
No, not at all. So they hope that by giving men this this Obain and it actually reduces your fertility, the men's fertility. So this is actually quite interesting because now biochemically, if you can extract that and you can actually purify Obain, and it actually only target alpha-4 receptors, then it's something that we can look into.
Okay, yeah. But that will not cause your heart to stop now, will it?
I hope not.
Because you did mention something about that just now.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Is that something that it looks promising for the future?
It is promising, but the question is whether, again, it's about the safety and side effect.
Mm, yeah. So still got a long way to go.
It has a long way to go.
Question from Un Yi Ng. He's saying, could we have an estimated cost comparison between contraceptive methods? Cost comparison.
Yeah, there is actually, it depends on, again, the types of contraception, whether it's permanent or reversible, for example. It also depend on the timeline. How long are you going to be on contraception, for example? So there is always there are also a lot of information online at the moment to actually make a comparison about how much it costs and so forth. But I would say that if you go to your obstetrician and gynecologist, they probably will be able to sit down and then explain to you what are the costs.
Because you need to also go with what agrees with you and what is possibly the best method for you
isn't it? Yeah.
What are the new forms of birth control for women that are being researched at the moment?
Oh, that's very interesting, I must say. Well, what happened is that...
Why are they not researching the men?
Unfortunately, men don't tolerate things very well. Just like flu, for example. So when women have flu, we get on with it. But when have you ever seen men with flu?
Yes.
Aha. Now you get what I mean. Oops.
Okay. So exciting for the women again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what happened is that for example, the oral contraceptive pills that we use, we are actually stopping ovulation but the egg, which is supposed to ovulate out, dies away. So every month we actually lose a bunch of eggs. Now there is something new, what we call the egg stopper or snooze button for the eggs. That is something called anti-Mullerian hormone. Well, or what we call Mullerian inhibiting substance. Now, scientists are getting very excited about it because what happens is they don't just stop you from ovulating. They actually preserve your eggs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rather than waste it.
Yeah, rather than wasting it. So there's something going on called the snooze button for women.
Yeah, because our eggs are so precious now that, you know, we are...
Yes.
Having children older. And
yes, you know. That's right. Yeah. So that is something that we are very, very excited about.
But you
about.
Can preserve the egg. What about the quality of the egg?
Well, the thing is, if the snooze buttons actually stop you, your eggs from developing further, it's likely to be like freezing your eggs, for example.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's something that I'm really, really excited about.
Is that still far away?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's still far away. Yeah.
Okay. How long? What is it, still in trial stage or has it even hit clinical trials yet?
No, not at all. It's still in animal studies, unfortunately. Okay. They're still concentrating on mice at the moment.
Okay. So doesn't matter, but something that's exciting in the horizon.
Is,
anything
is.
Else?
Well, of course, we are still looking at men. There is something called a gel, which is a progesterone and testosterone gel, which is something similar to the injections that we mentioned about. But now they have actually moved on to gels because for the injections, it's actually every 2 weekly kind of injections. And men find it, the disruptions of... So what happens is that if you have 2 weekly kind of injection, the hormones are going up and down quite rapidly.
It's a roller coaster.
It's a roller coaster. So therefore, they have mood swings and so forth. So now there is something new called the gel. So men has just had to apply it daily on both sides of their shoulder, and it seems to again reduces the sperm count and motility as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
okay,
so we are waiting for that trial to give us some results.
Okay, yeah. And so what are your hopes for the development of contraceptive methods in the near future? I mean, what do you hope for, you know, females and males and how we interact and all of that? How do you see all of this coming together?
In Ethiopia, okay.
This is not about starving children now, is it?
No, I'm just joking. All right. Okay. So what happened is that my hope for contraception is that we are able to produce a contraception which have no side effect, reliable, and convenient. And you just have to switch it off and switch it on, and it's very rapidly reversible. So I don't know how far are we away from this dream, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Your message to couples on family planning.
I think it's important to talk about it because a lot of times we find that couples don't talk about family planning. And when they go into a relationship and having a family, and then they suddenly realize that there is a lot of conflict because of the number of children they want, family size. That includes contraception. That includes finances as well, planning as well. So I think it's important to talk about all these things. Yeah. And of course, if you feel that you have to, you want to have a family planning and you want to take a contraception, please turn to your doctor and talk about it, because sometimes it's actually easy to go over the counter to get some of the, you know, contraceptive pills and so forth, but you never know that whether you're suitable for this kind of contraceptive pills.
So having that conversation is important.
It's extremely important.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, talking to us about sharing that responsibility for family planning on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.